Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, where you never know what kind of a conversation you are going to hear. It could be your conversation. If you want to call me at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. We'll get you on the air with your comment or question. If you want to send me an email, I get thousands of emails. I love them. Love reading them. And I do my best to read as many as I can on the air. As you know, I might even read a few today. You can send me an email by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. Click on, let's see, what do you want to click on? You want to click on contact, and then you can send me an email. I got one right here. I should say I've got one right here. This is from Barb. She writes in to say, I just heard a listener's email that you read about paying all their hard-earned money to send their children to Catholic schools, and I love the idea of a refund. She says, I feel the same way. My sons went to a Jesuit high school, and my daughter went to a Loreto nun high school. None of my children believe in God now. I'm praying daily and keeping communication open as best I can. They suffer from depression and are very attuned to their feelings. It makes me sad that they do not let the Lord help them. Thank you. And that's from Barb. Barb, well, thank you. And I commiserate with you. There are just so many families all around. I gave a talk at a Catholic seminary that I am associated with. No, I'm not studying for the priesthood. Nancy won't let me do that. Nor will the church, for that matter. But in any case, I'm affiliated with a large and venerable Catholic seminary that I try to help out at. And I gave a talk the other night, and there were, I don't know, 500 people there, maybe more, I don't know. But as in my talk, I was talking about what you're talking about, and that is how even in the quote-unquote best families, I'll put that in quote marks because that means different things to different people. But even in the best families, you take your kids to Mass every Sunday, maybe more often than that. Maybe you pray the rosary with your kids at home. You send them to Catholic school like you did in good faith, assuming that the Jesuit fathers and the Loreto sisters, or in any given case, whoever's running the Catholic school, you send them there in good faith and you write the check for tuition each month in good faith because you're presuming that they're going to receive not just a quality education, but an education that's not going to destroy their Catholic faith in the process. Only to find to your, well, dismay is probably not a strong enough word, to your shock and horror that when your children graduate from high school, go on to college, or maybe even at some point before that, they have ceased believing in God, or they no longer follow Jesus. They are spiritual but not religious, Mom. Thanks, but no thanks. I'm not going to go to Mass with you. That kind of thing. So in this talk I was giving, I could see on the faces of the predominantly lay audience, most of whom are parents and most of whom have children, and most of those children are grown up just like Barb's. And they're nodding their heads, you know, and sort of like a sad kind of agreement with this reality that happens all over the place. Which, by the way, is a very good reason for Relevant Radio to exist. Because we can reach your kids, Barb. That's the thing. We can reach them. You have to maybe let them know that we're out there. Maybe text your sons and daughters, the ones who are struggling with their feelings, maybe depression. Cyrus, we had a guy call... A gentleman called Friday, may I say to you, and he hadn't been to confession in
65 years. 65 years.
I know.
It's incredible.
Yes. I'm still awestruck. And you know what he said? He said 60, and I made the quip, but it was true. I said, you know, the last time you went to confession was before I was born. And he said, yeah, he said, I just didn't want to go. But what turned the key in the locked door for him was listening to Relevant Radio. So Boy, that one goes in the Hall of Fame. Well, that gentleman's name was Howard, I think, right?
That sounds right. Yep. God bless you, Howard.
He's in the Hall of Fame.
Well,
65 years.
So these kids that are going to Catholic schools and then they grow up and there's a period of their lives where maybe they've walked away from the faith, but isn't it, they still have a foundation and it's still in their bones. And so even if they're away from it for a little while, are you seeing that as they get older, they come back to their roots?
Often they do. Sad to say, often they don't. But I'll tell you what I think what the factor is in the cases where they do. More often than not, anyway. It's not an absolute thing. But I think more often than not, in those cases where the kids were raised Catholic, they grow up, they leave the faith, they don't believe in God, they don't pray, they don't receive the sacraments, their parents are heartbroken, and maybe years go by. But what I have observed is that when the parents, even if it takes a long time and it's a steady but slow process, when the parents continue not just praying for them, which is the most important thing to do, but they keep cultivating that soil, they keep tilling that soil, they keep recommending, here's a good book, listen to this CD, here's a link to a radio program. And I am a big advocate, as you know, Cyrus, that we should be texting this stuff to our kids. Text them video clips. Text them audio clips. We have a whole YouTube channel for this program, and we have all kinds of stuff on there. And typically, 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes long, people will listen to that. Just parents, grab this stuff and text it to your kids. They're already looking at their phones anyway. So that's my response, Cyrus, to your question. It seems to me, and this is anecdotal, but I think I'm onto something here, that when parents remain proactive in these ways, more often than not, something is going to stick. And eventually, some of these young people who are now maybe middle-aged by that time, they do come back. And we know that because we hear from them. And so I don't know that there's a magic bullet, so to speak, but I think this is one of those things that tends to work. So Barb, give that a shot. It's my advice. So, yeah. I mean, and tell your kids, if they say, well, Mom, I don't believe that anymore. There's a guy who would love to talk to you about that. Give him a call. Not Drew Mariani. I mean, give him a call, too. He's a nice guy. I like Drew.
You're talking about Father Simon?
Yeah, I walked into that one. Yeah, just give me a call. Tell your kids to give me a call. But believe me, hear me now and believe me later. If you are proactive in this way, if you're chumming the waters little by little, just keep tilling that soil, keep broadcasting some of that seed out there. And sooner or later, something is going to stick. I do believe that. But if you don't do that, then there's nothing there to stick. And the likelihood of those children of yours coming back goes way down, seems to me. 888-914-9149. Now, we're going to give the blue ribbon to a young fellow named Jack from Mesa, Arizona, who's been on hold from before the time the show started this morning. So, Jack, I'm going to go to you first. Welcome.
What did I say? Hi, Patrick.
Hello, Jack. How are you today?
Good.
Well, good. I'd like to hear what's on your mind today. What question do you have for me?
Oh, yeah. The question is, does Satan have a conscience?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me ask you a question first, though, so I know how to answer this. How do you understand the word conscience? What does that mean to you?
It means it's like if you want to do something bad, something inside of you says, no, don't do it.
Right.
That's what it means to me, sort of.
That's good.
Good.
You know what it also means is that after you've done something bad, your conscience bothers you and says, you shouldn't have done that. Have you ever had that happen? You probably haven't because you're still pretty young.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a pretty seasoned veteran, I guess, huh? So let me answer your question, Jack. The answer is yes, Satan does have a conscience, and it's similar to our conscience, but it's also different because angels are pure spirits. So they don't have bodies, and they don't need bodies to do what their spirits can do. We need bodies. So our consciences work in a similar way, but it's not exactly the same way. So, because we're comparing angels and human beings. But this much I can tell you is that the angels all know in their soul, they know what you and I might think of as a conscience. They know that they have either done right or wrong. But what's different about the angels is that they made their decision all at once and only once. See, you and I make decisions all the time. And as you get older, maybe you'll look back and remember this conversation when you're a much older guy. And over the course of your years, you will look back and say, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. I wish I hadn't done that. Or I'm glad I did that. That was the right thing to do. It wasn't easy, but I'm glad I did it because it was the right thing to do. That's also your conscience speaking. So over the course of your lifetime, your conscience is going to speak to you all the time and about many, many different things. Okay? Angels are not like that. When God created the angels, and of course, Satan, the worst of the bad angels, because he rebelled against God, God gave them a test, and they passed it, in which case they went into heaven, and they saw God face to face. Those are the good angels. Or they failed the test, in which case they're the demons, Satan, the devil, and all the demons. So for them, they have in their conscience the knowledge that what they did by passing or failing this test that God gave them, they know that they did either the right thing or the wrong thing. And they'll forever know that. That's always going to be in their conscience. They're aware of it, but they're not going to have another chance. So the devil, in his conscience, he knows, yeah, I did something really bad and I'm going to be punished for this forever. I'll never get out of this punishment. He knows that in his conscience. But that's different because there's only one thing that their conscience will tell them, and that is, did you pass the test or did you fail the test? And that's different from us because we have many tests throughout our lives. Do you see the difference between human beings and angels?
Yeah, I see the difference.
Well, you asked me a very good question today. I'm really glad you did. All right. Well, you got anything else for me, Jack, before I have to go?
Well, I feel like I think this is a yes, but does God have a conscience? Or does he not need one?
Another very good question. No, he doesn't have a conscience. We have a conscience that informs us of information about whether we're doing something right or wrong. God does not have a conscience because, number one, God already knows anything that can be known. There's nothing you or anything could tell God that he doesn't already know. So he doesn't need a conscience to tell him. But there's another reason. The other reason is that the conscience tells you when you are going to do something good or bad, or if you've done something good or bad, but God doesn't need a conscience because he's all good. He can't do anything bad because by his nature, he only does good things. So he doesn't need a conscience for that reason.
And God's perfect, so.
Yes. Yes, he is. Well, Jack, this has been interesting and fun for me. Have you enjoyed our conversation?
Yeah.
Good. Well, do tell your mom, thank you for letting you call me, and maybe we'll talk again. I look forward to what other questions you come up with. Thank you. Let's go to Christian now in South Pasadena, California. Hi, Christian.
Patrick, good morning. I've called the show many times, and I told you my story about how you and Relevant Radio brought me to the Catholic faith. And
awesome.
I wanted to share the very good news with you that I was confirmed Easter Vigil. I am a full-fledged Catholic. It's unbelievable. It's surreal. It's beautiful. And I've never been happier in my life. And I thank
I am
you for
overjoyed.
That, Patrick.
I am overjoyed to hear this great news, Christian. And I do remember talking to you before. Just remind me, though, what was your background? Did you come out of nothingism or did you have a different background faith-wise before you became Catholic?
I became born again. It was a very dramatic conversion experience into the Pentecostal church when I was 18, and then bounced around a lot since then. I'm 55 mm-hmm. now, but I settled into the Presbyterian church. So basically a lifelong Protestant. And
yes.
Like I told you, I saw a Relevant Radio bumper sticker. It was actually Immaculate Heart Radio back then. It was about 3.5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
I tuned in, heard you, was blown away by your show and started reading all the books that you had suggested. And then I just took a deep dive. I mean, I read book after book about the history of the early church and the early Christianity. And like I told you before, I came to the inevitable conclusion that the Catholic Church is the one true church of Jesus Christ. And I knew that I had to become Catholic. And it wouldn't have happened if it weren't for you and Relevant Radio. So God bless you for that, man.
Well, indeed. Praise God. I am so honored and grateful and happy and grinning ear to ear. All of us are here at Relevant Radio. What a beautiful testimony.
Listen, I've been reading the Handbook for Christian Apologetics, one of the books that you, yes, I think, taught for a while when you were teaching.
Still teaching.
Are there any other books you... Oh, okay. Are there any other books you could recommend? I want to become the best apologist I can possibly be.
Well, that's a very noble cause. And, you know, many of us are still trying to attain that status. And, you know, we're working our way in that direction, myself included. I would suggest, did you pick up a book called Search and Rescue by chance? Is that one of the books that you read? Okay. It's one of the books I wrote. The reason I reference it is because at the end of the book, I give a reading list by, you know, beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And it's a rather comprehensive reading list. Now, I wrote that book 20 years ago, so many other good books have come out since then. But if you want some of the timeless classics, the things that you would always want to be able to read and be familiar with, you can get a big head start with that list if you want. Now, I think you don't even have to buy it. If you go on Amazon, I think you can, like, you know where it says look inside and you can look inside the book?
Yes.
I think if you put the keywords, maybe if you put in reading list, it may take you to that page online. You can just look at it there without having to buy the book. But it is in that book, and that might be a good start for you. There are countless other books out there. You know, I'd like to think that the books I've written since that one came out 20 years ago are worth something, and you can find those as well. They're out there. But I would definitely say, in addition to that, I would get the Beginning Apologetics series of books by Jim Burnham and Father Frank Chacone, Chacon. I believe there may be as many as 20 of them by now. They're 8.5 by 11 size, and they're in kind of a workbook format. It's not like a true book. It's more of like a workbook, but each one has maybe, I don't know, 40 pages, that's something like that. And it's a distilled basic introduction to all the different topics: Mary, the Eucharist, atheism, the problem of evil, how do you deal with people who are involved in the occult. It's a pretty wide variety, and they sell them as a set, or you can buy them individually. And those two are available at your local Catholic bookstore, or if you can't find one there, they're easy to get online. Okay.
All right, Patrick. Yes, thank you for that. I will check into it, and again, God bless you, and I'll call in from time to time when I have questions.
I hope you will. I enjoy our conversations, and again, I am truly thrilled that you have become Catholic. I'm so happy for you, and hopefully you're not getting much static from your family and friends. Hopefully they're rejoicing with you.
They are. They're all rejoicing. Now I got to convert them.
There you go. There you go. That's step number two. Well, thank you, Christian. And what a great way to wrap up this segment. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Give me a call if you're interested. You know, if you want to ask a question, get a second opinion, whatever it may be, I'm here for you. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
This hour sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare, the first to offer comprehensive sharing for prescription medications. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
If you need another reason to rethink getting a tattoo, I don't know if this is a reason for you, but probably a reason for this guy, Jesus Colmenares, 29 years old. He's in jail right now, facing a charge of battery with a deadly weapon, kidnapping, assault, and owning or possessing a gun by a prohibited person. Here's what happened to him. March 18th, police responded to reports of a person shot at a convenience store. This is in, where is this? Wabash Valley. And the responding officers found the victim with several gunshot wounds to his legs. The victim said he was walking to a friend's house when his knees went numb. While at the convenience store, a witness approached police saying that he was in the parking lot at the time of the shooting and had been kidnapped. The kidnapping victim told the police he had gotten off work and was in the parking lot playing on his phone. The man said he heard gunshots, and then a man came up to his window and pointed a gun at him. The man with the gun then got into the passenger seat and told the kidnapping victim to drive. The kidnapping victim drove the man, who police say is Colmenares, to another convenience store, and this is in Las Vegas area. So what did the police do? Well, because the guy got away, they pulled a video from the convenience stores, and guess what they found? They found a distinctive tattoo on both of his hands. On one of his hands, he had a rosary bead necklace with a cross tattooed. That's how they described it. So what did they do? Well, they jumped on social media. They jumped on Facebook. And they said, based on the tattoos that were visible on his Facebook pages and reviewing the surveillance from the gas station to look for any distinctive tattoos based on the quality surveillance that allowed them to see this right-hand rosary tattoo, they were able to narrow it down to that guy. And he's being he's arrested. He's being charged with felony assault, domestic battery, kidnapping, etc. Does that, Cyrus, would that qualify as a reason not to get a tattoo?
I don't know. After the fact? Maybe don't do the crime in the first place. I don't know.
Oh, you know what?
I don't know if it has anything to do with tattoos or not.
I don't either.
I don't need any more reasons not to get tattoos. The needle alone is reason enough for me.
Mm.
No thanks.
So maybe another takeaway would be, A, don't do the crime in the first place.
There you go.
B, if you're a criminal, don't be so stupid as to post pictures of yourself on Facebook.
Yeah.
That show your tattoos that can be easily identified. That makes sense to me.
That does make sense.
It's a good policy. Yeah. Also, you're a Chris Pratt fan, right?
Parks and Recreation? I do like him. Yeah. I used to like him a lot, and then he, you know, stuff in his own personal life, he ended up getting a divorce and stuff like that. So it's like, he's not my favorite anymore. But I still like him a lot. He makes me laugh. He's funny.
He is a funny guy. He's a good actor. He's in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. And what is his, Star-Lord or something like
that? Yeah, he's the main guy. It's really the Parks and Rec is why I love him. But okay. Yeah, he's Star-Lord.
Well, there's a whole wing of the Twitter mob that is trying very hard to have director James Gunn replace him or recast him with a different actor who looks similar to him. And the reason is very simple. It's because they don't like the fact that he's public about his Christianity. They don't like it. And they say, well, that's just code for homophobia. That's what that is. Or transphobia. They call him an anti-LGBT bigot because he believes in traditional marriage and he's willing to say so.
Yeah, it's crazy that they're going after this guy. He's just a big teddy bear. He's like a big sweetheart. At least I don't know him personally, but his public persona, you know, what he's given to us to appreciate or not appreciate. He's just this really likable human being, and he goes to a mega church. And the mega church, I remember the story breaking a couple years ago, and the mega church had some anti-LGBTQ whatever.
You probably left off three or four letters. But whatever.
It's the whole alphabet at this point.
Yeah.
And so I've never heard anything. I looked again this morning. I've looked for him specifically saying something negative about that lifestyle. And I can't find one single thing, but boy, are they after him.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like that there's a Christian that has made it this high up in celebrity stardom.
Well, imagine that there, and this is a totally fictitious podcast. It doesn't exist. So I can't promote, you know, anything he does because he's not real. But imagine a podcaster named Mo Jogan, just to pull a name out of the air. So if Mo Jogan existed and had a popular podcast and had Chris Pratt on his program, and Chris Pratt said, "It has been recently been suggested that I belong to a church which hates a certain group of people and is infamously anti-LGBTQ. Nothing could be further from the truth. I go to a church that opens their doors to absolutely everyone." And that's what he is referring to. They just don't like the fact that, you know, it gets down to this. Well, first of all, they want him fired. They don't want him in the movies because they want to go see the movie, but they don't want to see him in the movie because he disagrees with their lifestyle. So I'm just mentioning this only because I think that movie is either being made right now or it will be coming out sometime soon. So it'll be interesting to see if they boycott it.
His character is going to be in the new Thor movie. And there's been some kind of speculation that there's going to be a relationship between Star-Lord and Thor.
What do you mean by relationship? That's a squishy word.
It is a squishy word. And it's totally... I haven't seen any proof, but it's definitely something that they're pushing. This group of people have been pushing this kind of stuff on mainstream movies. They push it into Star Wars,
yeah,
and they crowbar it into the Marvel movies. Because if you know everyone isn't LGBTQ, then they're not being properly represented, and they get very, very upset.
Yeah. Sounds like you have an opinion on this issue.
I just think it's ridiculous. It doesn't have any place in the movies. Can we not?
None of it's real anyway. It's all fake to begin with, but it's entertaining fake. But this is just an example of how brazen these people are. If you ask me, they cannot stand the fact that somebody somewhere might disagree with them. And it galls them so much that they're, you know, it's hell on wheels, basically, for them to try to tear down anybody who doesn't agree with them. But that's okay.
Yeah, so when Chris Pratt was 260-pound beer-drinking teddy bear, he was fine. But as soon as he got fit and into Marvel movies and found Jesus, they...
Look out!
They're after him. Yep.
Yeah, well, they'll forget about him, and they'll move on to the next victim. You know, and by the way, the Twitter mob is maybe out of business soon enough now that Elon Musk has joined. I've got some Elon Musk news, which is good and interesting if you ask me, but I'm going to get to that a little bit later. First of all, let's take some more phone calls. Thank you, Cyrus, for fleshing that out for me. Shirley in Appleton, Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes.
I have a question regarding the Gospel of Mark. When Jesus is arrested, Mark mentions that there's a young man in linens, he runs away. And I'm wondering what the significance is of that, because it's not mentioned in any of the other Gospels.
Well, yeah, this is one of those enigmatic statements that I can't say with certitude what it means. But some have wondered if maybe it was a reference to Mark himself. This is in Mark 14:51. And we see it, you know, we see it in that whole thing. And a young man followed him with nothing but a linen cloth about his body, and they seized him. And he ran away from them, and he ran away naked because they grabbed the cloth. He ran away naked. So who is this young man? We don't know. It doesn't tell us. But there have been some speculations that it might have been a very young Mark. Some have speculated that it might be John. It's unclear, and I've read different explanations from different commentators, but ultimately, we don't know exactly who he was. There's some theories, but that's all they really are, is just theories.
Okay. That answers my question. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. I wish I could have said, it's definitely this person, but we don't have that level of certitude.
Had to call you a lawyer.
A lawyer or a liar?
A liar, because what you told me is what the explanation that is in one of my Bibles, but there's no explanation in any of the other ones, so I was just curious.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's interesting. The four Gospels, first of all, they're anonymous, number one. So the Gospel writers don't tell you, they certainly don't say, my name is Matthew and I'm going to write this book. They don't tell you that. There's internal evidence that helps us identify it. There's also, of course, apostolic tradition that definitively tells us who wrote these Gospels. But there are certain things about the Gospels where you can see, to give you an example, to go back to Mark for a minute. Mark was the secretary, so to speak, or the scribe that St. Peter used, especially when he was in captivity, to kind of tell. St. Peter told his story as an eyewitness of Jesus, and he told what happened and all that. And Mark, who, you know, presuming he wasn't this young man, it was not something that he saw with his own eyes. So he had to rely upon eyewitnesses. And in this case, he was a companion of St. Peter. St. Peter told him a story. But you'll notice in Mark's gospel, which is the shortest of the four, that although the other gospels have very interesting and powerful details about the good things of St. Peter, like you are rock and upon this rock I will build my church, I give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, Jesus changes his name from Simon to Rock Peter in English, and so many other things, you know, Peter, feed my sheep, etc. You don't see any of those things that are positive about Peter in Mark's gospel. You only see the negative things about Peter. Now, there are plenty of negative things about Peter in the other gospels, but the other gospels have all the positive things. And so one of the theories that is certainly plausible to me is that given the direct connection between St. Peter sharing his reminiscences and his eyewitness accounts of Jesus and his ministry with Mark, that Peter, it seems, he, out of humility, didn't ever mention any of those really powerful moments, or, you know, he never got around to telling Mark that, well, Jesus gave me the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Jesus said, I'm the rock upon which the church is being built. Apparently, he didn't tell him those things, but he did be sure, he was sure to tell him all the negative things about himself. So that seems to speak to his humility, that he could have said all kinds of things about himself, and he didn't. So I find little details like that interesting, too.
Yeah, sometimes little things like that just kind of jump out at you. And I appreciate you being there, having answers. If you don't have the exact answer, at least you have a theory, an idea, which helps the rest of us to be able to think things through, too.
Well, thank you, Shirley. I have benefited greatly from reading commentaries by Catholic scholars, biblical scholars, so very often I have to look to them for guidance on what some of these things are. And most of the time, quite honestly, it's the church fathers and their comments on Scripture. So I'm glad I could pass along what little I've got. Thank you, Shirley. How about Nellie now? Where is Nellie? In Westlake, Texas. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning,
yes.
Patrick.
Hi. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I have a question. I normally... I'm asked a lot to pray novenas after someone passes, and I've been asked the question, why is it that we pray 9 days on a novena? How come not 3 or 2 or 5? Why is it specifically 9 days?
Because it's a biblical number, and I'll share with you the specifics on that. So do you have a pen handy? I can give you some examples of what I'm referring to.
Yes.
Okay, so I just want to make sure, and you know what, now that I think about it, I also wrote an article, and I can share that with you as well, that's got more information in it. So novenas are named novenas because there are 9 days in a novena, and so we see some examples, okay, so Acts chapter 1, verses 13 and 14, in Acts chapter 2, in verse 1, we see that that 9 days elapsed between the time of the Ascension and Pentecost, and we're told that the apostles and Mary were in the upper room, and they were praying for that 9-day period. And so we see that emerge in those two passages as two examples, but there are others. So St. Paul doesn't make a novena, strictly speaking, but in Acts chapter 9, verse 9, he makes what I would call a mini novena of 3 days, and he spends the 3 days praying. Another reason that 9 is a significant number is because Jesus died at the 9th hour. And we read about that in Matthew chapter 27 and Mark chapter 15. We also know that the apostles, it says in Acts chapter 3, verse 1, that the apostles frequently gathered to pray in the temple at the 9th hour. So the number nine, it has a significance in that regard. And you'll see this in other passages as well. I just don't want to bury you in passages. But these are traditional in nature. They're not required. You can make a novena in 60 seconds if you want to. We call them novenas because they're special prayers intended for specific purposes, but you don't have to do it only for 9 days. You can pray a novena for as long as you want or as briefly as you want. What do you think, Nellie?
Yes. Well, that makes sense. It makes sense. Mm-hmm. Why 9 days? I was just kind of curious, you know, why the specific 9 days, not knowing that you can actually pray more, just naming it novena. So that makes sense. Now, you know, I have a different kind of a question, and I appreciate your answer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of like about death cremation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that approved by the Catholic as far as cremation? What I understand is we can be cremated as long as we are buried and we don't throw ashes on waters or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. That's more or less true. The church permits it, but the church does not encourage it. I myself don't encourage it. I regard cremation as sometimes it's a choice people feel compelled to make for financial reasons because it's less expensive. And I understand that. That makes complete sense to me if you're on a tight budget. But personally, I have a horror of the very idea of destroying the body that way. And so the traditional Catholic approach has always been no to cremation and yes to burial, encouraging people to bury the body. But the church has relaxed this in recent decades and now does permit Catholics in good faith to get cremated if that's what they want. But as you say, the church says you can't scatter the ashes. You can't keep mom's or grandma's ashes on the grand piano in the living room. It's got to be properly interred in a columbarium, for example. So the church permits it but doesn't encourage it. And I'll have to leave it at that, Nellie. I appreciate that very much. It's a question that many people are asking themselves these days. I want to remind you about the Walk to Mary, which is coming up. It's an annual 21-mile pilgrimage, Saturday, May the 7th, starting at the National Shrine of St. Joseph in De Pere, Wisconsin, going all the way to Our Lady of Good Help Shrine in Champion, Wisconsin. You can walk all of it or part of it. More information at walktomary.com. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Let's do it. Andrea in St. Charles, Illinois, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hi, Patrick. Oh, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
So my daughter, who is engaged and is getting married next spring to a man we like very much, but is not Catholic. And he is not open at all to the Catholic Church. And it's very disappointing. My daughter has walked away and is now part of a non-denominational Christian church, which needless to say, Dad and I are very unhappy about. But okay, unfortunately, she's an adult, so all we can do is pray. But I do regret very much that she's not going through some kind of pre-Cana program. Mm-hmm. You know, to my knowledge, her church does not do anything like this. But, you know, I think it's so helpful to any young couple getting married to find out, you know, where each other stands on these significant issues of life. And I'm wondering if you have some kind of recommendation that is not a Catholic option. I mean, it breaks my heart, but
let's start there. Why not give a little pushback in a positive sense, you know, to make a play for your daughter's attention that she would reconsider, you know, we don't want her to leave the Catholic Church. So why not give her something that's Catholic? It might work.
Oh, I've tried. And believe me, we've had very serious, tearful conversations about it. She knows her dad and I are exactly where we stand. And unfortunately, at this point, she's an adult. And, you know, I don't have to tell you, there's only so far you can push. But she knows we're very upset about it. I mean,
is she a believing, I guess, Protestant now, or what is her commitment?
I think really what's happened is she loves this person, and you know, we like him very much. He seems like a good man, but he, for some reason, he and his family are, you know, they're, I think, anti-Catholic, and although he's hasn't said anything, but he won't even consider getting married in the Catholic Church or doing anything related to the Catholic Church. And because of that, it's very disappointing that she's not pushing. She does not want to push back at all.
Mm-hmm. So I guess my question, just to restate it then, given what you just said, is she buying into his worldview? Is she accepting his religious proclivities, or is she still thinking of herself as a Catholic? Because this leads to a whole other question, and that is that, I mean, this will be an invalid marriage unless she receives permission from the bishop to do this, but I'm guessing she probably didn't seek permission. So there are layers of problems here.
Patrick, my husband and I literally sat on the, we sat and just sobbed. Because, and we told her, you're not married. You will not be married.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to be married. I mean, I can't even tell you. I mean, it was a brutal night, and we've had conversations since. And we told her, you will not be married to your dad and I. And you're not going to be married in the eyes of God, which is what we believe.
Yeah. And that still didn't move her. Is she that hardened?
And she was, you know, I think she is, I think that she at this point is willing. I think the sad thing is she was raised Catholic. Her dad and I are devout, you know, catechism carrying every week Catholics, rosary, you know, I mean, she knows where her dad and I are. I mean, we're, you know, we love our faith. We're very much into our faith. And she, you know, she was raised Catholic. I mean, she was at a Catholic school. She ran Kairos retreat. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. She's,
how old is she now?
Just said, pardon me?
How old is she now?
23.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is like the prodigal daughter. You've tried everything. You've tried to reason with her. She just isn't hearing it for whatever reason. So, I mean, as you say, there's nothing you can do to force her, and you shouldn't try to force her, obviously. You have to respect her, even though you don't respect the choices that she's making. You have to respect her freedom to make those choices, the way God does with us, right? So if she's willing to read a book, I mean, I would say give her Surprised by Truth. If you've got that book at home, get it off the bookshelf and give it to her. You want the one that has the subtitle 11 Converts. Give the biblical and historical reasons for becoming Catholic. I mean, that book will jar loose sometimes even the hardest hearted people against the Catholic Church. It reaches them in a way that's unique. Do you have that book? Have you read that book? Because I would suggest give her that book.
No, I've heard you talk about it. I've heard you talk about it many times, and I've thought about it, and maybe I will do that. I just, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess I can send it to her. I don't know that she'd read it. I don't know. I don't know. She may just sit there on the shelf.
It might. But then again, it might be something she'll pick
it's
up a year from now or 5 years from now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I would do it now. Full disclosure, I edited the book, but I'm not trying to sell you a book. I mean, you can get a cheapo used copy online, you know, so I'm not trying to put any money in my pocket, far from it. It's just that there's something about those particular testimonies that in volume two seems to have a very similar kind of effect on people, that it just gets over and around and under and through all of the barriers. and it will reach people at a level they're not expecting. And it answers so many of all the major and many of the minor objections to the Catholic Church, you know, scriptural and historical objections, it answers them, and it answers them in a definitive way. So, I mean, you've got nothing to lose. Spend 99 cents on Amazon and get a cheapo used copy. And I would try it.
Well, I will. I pray to God it'll open the book.
And, pray.
I'll try it. I mean, Patrick, we are praying. I mean, I keep hoping that.
I believe you.
Somehow God open her. Yeah. Yeah.
I believe you. And you know what? This is what you're describing is a classic textbook example of what countless parents are going through all over the country right now. Catholic folks like you and your husband, who you did all the right things, you said all the right things, you showed good example, you did everything. Now, when your children get to be adults, they are free to do what they want. And that's the sad thing, because you'd like to fix this if you could, because you see what the problem is. But if your son or daughter won't let you fix it, you have to stand by and watch them go down paths that are bad for them. And sometimes that's all you can do. It's like Mary at the foot of the cross, watching her son crucified and dying. Now, in this case, it's something negative. I mean, in the sense that she's walking away. But just that continuing to pray, the continuing to show good example, keep the lines of communication with her open. I'm sure you're doing all of this, so I realize you probably, nothing I'm saying is necessarily anything you haven't heard or that you're not doing, but maybe for people who are listening to you and they're going through this also, and they're thinking, well, what more can we do? Sometimes all you can do is what you've done, and you have to wait and wait on God and on his timing. And pray, you know, I like to talk about praying for a Philip to come into the life of your child. And that's the story in Acts chapter 8, where God mysteriously just sort of whisks Philip away to the desert to go meet an Ethiopian eunuch who's reading scripture but not understanding it. So he says, do you understand what you're reading? He says, no, how can I unless someone explains it to me? So he explains it to him. The man has a sudden conversion. He gets baptized then and there. And then we're told that as soon as God had done this and Philip accomplished this mission, he sort of whisked him away to some other place. So point being is that I really encourage you and your husband and all parents who are in this situation just to keep praying that God would send a Philip or 10 Philips into the lives of your children. And maybe it'll be a book. Maybe it'll be a radio program. Maybe it'll be a stranger that they meet and start talking to. God will send Philips into the lives of your children. You need to ask him to do that, though. That's my heartfelt advice. And I hope and pray that if you do give her that book, that will have some positive effect. Thank you. Oh, I could tell you stories about the testimonies in these Surprised by Truth books, you know, and I, from time to time, I do share them. One of the most dramatic examples of many dramatic examples was I got an email from a Catholic guy, and this would have been late 1990s, mid to late 1990s, so maybe 95, right around there. The book came out in 94, so maybe 95, 96, right in there. I get an email from a guy, Catholic guy, in law school, at a Protestant law school, a big Protestant university. And he shared with me, you know, I really appreciate some. I found this book. He was talking about the Surprised by Truth book. I found this book. Somebody gave it to me or whatever. And he says, people have been just really challenging my Catholic faith here and telling me I need to be born again and I need to leave the Catholic Church. I need to be, you know, born again, Bible believing Christian, etc. And he said, I really didn't have much by way of an answer until I came across this book. And I read it and it really helped me. And he sent me an email just to say thank you. So I wrote him back and I said, well, that's kind of you. Appreciate that. And it just, at that moment, the thought entered my mind. It just like a little poof, little breath of air. And I added in my email, by the way, and this is just on a lark, I said, if you would do me one favor, I'll send you a case of this book for free, and I'll pay the UPS shipping. All I ask is that if I send you a case of 44 copies of this book, when you go back to class, once you've received the books, if you would just hand these books out to the people who are giving you the hardest time for being a Catholic, if it's the professors, if it's fellow students, whoever's grinding on you the most about being a Catholic, if you just give them a copy of this book. And he said, yeah, sure. Here's my address. So I sent a box of books and I forgot about it. And I don't remember now because it's been so long. I don't remember if I ever had a follow-up conversation with him. I don't remember his name. That's all I remember. So I sent this box of books out. And I don't know, like 15 years go by. And I'm at an event and I'm signing books at the book table. And someone comes up to me and says, well, gosh, the music's going to start any second. So this is really dramatic. I want to share it with you, but I don't have time. So let the music play, because a man's got to know his limitations. And I will tell you what happened. It was like sending a message in a bottle, throwing it in the Atlantic Ocean, and then finding it again all those years later. And you won't imagine, you won't believe what happened. I could hardly believe it myself. And when I'm just waiting for that music, and when that music starts playing, then I know we're going to go to a break. I know it's coming. There it is. Okay. And when we come back, I promise you, I will start by telling you the rest of the story. Where have I heard that before? You're going to like this. You don't want to miss this. This will blow your mind. It blew my mind. It still blows my mind. And I'll blow your mind with this information when we come back. You don't want to miss it. I'll be right back.
Hey, what happened?